Hey there, my fellow thriver, and welcome back to the Trauma Mama podcast, where we talk about what trauma is, how it happens, how it affects our brains, behaviors, and relationships, and most importantly, what we can do about it. I'm your host and Trauma Mama, Alexandra Pratt. In our last episode, we talked about what trauma is, what it means to be traumatized, and how it happens. Today, we're going to discuss how our minds and bodies respond during the traumatic event and how those responses can affect our perceptions and relationships moving forward. And most importantly, I'm going to review some tips that can help alter and minimize these responses so that they don't take over when they're not meant to. So let's dive in. The term fight or flight was first used by Dr. Walter Cannon in 1915. He studied and taught at the Harvard University Department of Psychology and specialized in research of physical reactions to laboratory animals under pressure. He coined the term fight or flight response and redefined the biological term of homeostasis to signify the internal balance of the body. The concept of homeostasis was developed by Claude Bernard, a French physiologist. And in biology, homeostasis is the state of a steady internal physical and chemical condition that's maintained by living systems. According to Cannon, our bodies continuously seek to maintain this predefined state of equilibrium by regulating the complex interdependent systems of our organs. Changes in variables, such as body temperature, offsets a series of processes that is aimed at returning the body to its original balance. In his research, Cannon observed noticeable physical changes in the digestive system of animals experiencing fear, and he spent some 20 years studying the relationships of psychological and physical effects of stress on animals. And in the years since, psychologists and physiologists have continued to build on and refine Cannon's work, and now they've come to a greater understanding of how people react to threats and what they are now calling the four Fs: fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. To fight means to confront the threat aggressively. Flight means you run from the danger. Freeze, you find yourself unable to move or act against the threat. And fawn is the response of complying with the attacker in order to save yourself. Before the fight, flight, freeze, or fawn response kicks in, something has to happen to make you feel like you're in danger. Someone or something may be threatening to cause you physical or psychological harm. In our first episode, we define trauma as a fear response. This threat may be real or imagined, and as soon as you recognize the threat, your nervous system shifts into the acute stress response. Have you ever felt scared, threatened, or in danger? Well, chances are you've reacted with one of these four Fs. These are natural responses, and they're all hardwired in our brains. These physiological responses serve as an automatic way of protecting ourselves and increasing our chance of survival. They can serve a vital purpose in the right moment. And the underlying goal of these responses are to minimize, end, or avoid danger. However, because the fight, flight, freeze, or fawn response is physiological in nature, it can be very difficult to think about it rationally, meaning we do not control which response we react with in the moment. And we can also respond with one that actually prevents us from doing what's best. Learning to recognize which response is activated within us and when can help us learn how to handle them more effectively. Our bodies do not let us down when faced with a threatening situation. It's a result of evolution that we are prepared to fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. The problem is that The threats we face today are not all physical in nature and don't all require an immediate response. But we can't just turn off this evolutionary protector within us. We cannot stop the surge of adrenaline when even our attacker is just a stressful phone bill and not a tiger running after us. Our bodies still respond with biological changes, even when there's no actual physical threat. Here's how it works. Hormones such as adrenaline are released into your body from your endocrine system. Your heart rate speeds up, your blood pressure shoots higher, your pupils dilate, your veins constrict to send more blood to your muscles tense, and you begin to perspire. Digestion and immune systems shut down so energy can be used for dealing with the crisis. You may begin to tremble as your blood sugar shoots up to help your liver break down glycogen. So what in our brain makes all of this happen? These physical changes? The amygdala is an area of our brain that controls our decision-making and emotional responses. It's in charge of processing our fear and evaluating threats, all based on information that's conveyed to us by our senses, such as what we see and what we hear. So for example, a tiger presents an extremely dangerous threat, causing the amygdala to instantly send an emergency signal to the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus is an area of the brain that acts like a command center and communicates with the rest of the body, activating the sympathetic nerve system as an alarm. The fight, flight, freeze, or fawn response is activated by the sympathetic nerve system. But if the tiger that we see just happens to be a stuffed animal, we take a deep breath and release the tension. However, if the threat is real, the amygdala triggers a sudden and intense unconscious emotional response that actually shuts off the cortex of our brain, making it very hard to think clearly about the situation. As your brain starts to release stress hormones, such as cortisol, you'll find it increasingly hard to problem solve and concentrate. The sympathetic nerve system triggers one or more of these 4F responses before we can even consciously make a decision on how to act. I'll say that again. This happens in our brains and in our bodies before we can choose how to respond. We don't control how we respond in moments of extreme stress. Many things happen very fast. First, the hormone known as adrenaline and noradrenaline are released into our systems, and we notice the effects. A rapid pulse. Our breathing becomes increased as we try to take in more oxygen for faster action. The blood pressure goes up and extra oxygen is sent to the brain, trying to increase alertness. Sight, hearing, and other senses become sharper. And our glucose and fats from energy stored is being released into the bloodstream to give us extra power. Skin temperatures go up, and the increased sweat of the palm in our hands improves our grip should we need to climb a tree in order to flee. Digestion is slowed down, so all of our energy is now conserved for staying alive. And all of these reactions are caused by some very fast chemical processes in our body. This physical reaction is so intense that they say our body needs 20 minutes at least to physically recover from an acute stress reaction. And an adrenaline surge can impact our body for up to an hour. In this way, the whole process takes a big toll on our mind and our bodies. So let's dive deeper into these 4 F's. What do they look like? What do they feel like? And what disorders are associated with which stress patterns? Let's start with fight. Fight is the response that happens when you face a threat that you think you can defeat, whether you can actually defeat it or not. And when you launch into fight mode, the hormones released by your sympathetic nerve system, especially adrenaline, are what primes you to do battle. Fight looks and feels like crying, yelling, screaming, the desire to punch, smash, stomp, rip, kick, break, or throw things. Your body is flexed, your muscles are tight. You may grind your teeth and have a glaring look in your eye and fight in your voice. You may experience feelings of anger and rage, or even homicidal and suicidal thoughts. Your stomach is knotted. You may be nauseous, or even experience a burning sensation, like a bomb is erupting inside of you. The disorder that's typically associated with the fight type is narcissism. And that's when you're extremely self-centered with an exaggerated sense of self-importance. And these fight types are unconsciously driven by the belief that power and control can create safety, secure love, and even prevent abandonment. Up next is flight. And this happens when you don't think you can defeat the threat. You may feel cold and frozen or numb. You may have pale or flushed skin and feelings of stiffness or heaviness. You may be holding your breath or experiencing restricted breathing with a deep sense of dread and fear. Your heart is pounding as you look to hide, run, flee, and avoid danger at all costs. And the disorder that's typically associated with the flight response is obsessive compulsive disorder. Flight types are unconsciously driven by the belief that perfection will make them safe and lovable. They try to outrun the trauma. They appear to have their starter button stuck in the on position, always trying to be perfect to prevent the next threat. Now let's talk about the freeze response. Freeze types unconsciously disconnect from experiencing the pain, and it can feel very similar in your body to the flight response. You may feel cold. You may have numbness in your body. Your skin may be pale or flush, and you may experience feelings of stiffness or heaviness with a deep sense of dread and fear. Your heart may be racing, but your heart rate may also decrease as your body shuts down and collapses. You may disassociate completely. Disassociation is an adaptive response to a threat, and it's a form of freezing. It's when we shut down to draw less attention to ourselves, or in extreme cases, play dead by leaving our body mentally and emotionally shut down. It's important to know that disassociation is a very normal response in the face of trauma. However, it can be problematic when it becomes the only and primary method of coping. And if this is your primary way of coping, you may have dissociative disorder and be driven by the belief that people are dangerous. And to avoid danger, you must avoid close relationships, that your safety lies in solitude. Some people who have dissociative disorders have completely given up on the possibility of love and being lovable. And finally, the last one is fawn. And this usually kicks in when you've tried fight, flight, or freeze. You may find yourself seeking safety by integrating the wishes and needs and demands of the person or threat. And people who fawn typically come from abusive situations where they've learned to survive by pleasing their abuser. For example, if you're the abused child of a narcissistic parent, your only hope of survival might be compliance and helpfulness. So the disorder that's typically associated with the fawn response is codependency. And we're going to talk about that more in future episodes, but briefly, it's basically you seek safety and approval by taking care of the wishes of other people's before your own, even if you are hurting yourself to do so. You forfeit your boundaries, your preferences, your needs, and your rights to do what the other person wants, even if they don't ask you to. Sometimes codependency happens and we don't even realize it. And you can recognize this if you start to notice that no matter how poorly someone treats you, you are more concerned about making them happy than doing what's right for you and your safety and your needs. So these four Fs typically happen individually, but they can also happen in a combination. So here are the four main hybrid patterns that you may experience. The first is fawn slash fight, and that's when you try to control threats in a coercive or manipulative way. Then there's fawn slash flight, and that's when you avoid a threat by becoming invaluable to the person or situation. Next is fawn slash freeze, surrendering to the threat by taking on the victim role. And then there's flight slash freeze. And that's when you avoid threats by focusing on other situations. When we experience stress or trauma, we will automatically gravitate to one or two of these four Fs. But what happens when you've been traumatized is that you get stuck with that one or two ways of responding. You don't have the flexibility to trigger the correct response. You keep repeating the response that you use to get through the trauma. And as you can imagine, this can cause problems because each type of response is appropriate in a certain situation. And the healthiest scenario is that you display flexibility in your responses. So these inappropriate responses can lead to mental and emotional disorders. Here are three main ways that these inappropriate responses can negatively impact us. Number one, it can prevent us from making an appropriate choice for our safety. Everyone makes the wrong choice of how to respond at one time or another. And sometimes it's not very important, but it often has adverse effects. For example, if you continuously fight unwinnable battles when running would have been appropriate, you may constantly be increasing your danger rather than minimizing it. Number two, getting stuck in one or two responses. And as I mentioned above, if you get stuck in one or two types of these responses, you don't have the flexibility that you need to adapt to different situations. If you face danger on a daily basis, you may come to rely on a habitual response instead of responding with the most appropriate for each different threatening situation. And the third one is we may perceive a threat now when there is none. This is where it gets really tricky, because if your brain perceives a threat, it will ignite these responses, whether the threat is real or not. You might make a stress reaction to a meaningless detail. If you think there's a threat, your brain and body will respond. And that can put a lot of stress on your relationships and on your body when you are constantly reacting to fear or threats that aren't really there. I'd like to express now that these behaviors that we learned to survive, and we should be proud of ourselves for surviving, because these behaviors and responses are not a weakness or a character flaw. You did what you needed to do in order to survive. And you know what? The great news is what we learned back then can be unlearned now. And we can learn more helpful behaviors. And it starts by understanding yourself a little bit more and trying to recognize what your response type is. Moving forward after the trauma, with any relationships that we do form in the future, with the inevitable ups and downs, they're prone to remind us of problems we experienced during the trauma and can trigger upsetting and painful flashbacks, causing inappropriate reactions that constrain our relationship. I know I've personally experienced this. During the stress response, it's very hard for us to just snap out of it. Our brains have had thousands of years of evolution to develop this way of keeping us safe, and it's not just going to allow you to override the system. So this means we need to practice switching off the response, practice being calm, and practice taking the appropriate action. We must do this over and over and over until it becomes second nature, and we're able to effectively act or stay calm. So let's talk about some of the ways that we can actually practice making the right choice of action and or staying calm. I'm going to start by saying that the most effective treatment is counseling and therapy, because this helps to better identify the psychological and physical roots. And in some cases, pharmaceutical treatment may be recommended, particularly if you have severe anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, or depression. But outside of therapy, there's other things that we can practice. So let's talk about that. The first step is awareness. Knowing what your typical response is and how it feels in your body. Once you have awareness, you can start to change course by recognizing the difference between a real and an imagined threat. You may start to discover that what you perceive as a threat in the here and now is actually only a vague reminder of the traumatic event. And if you can recognize the physical symptoms, it can help to remove some of the fear and catastrophic misinterpretations of that physical feeling, such as, my chest is tight, I'm having a heart attack. My thoughts won't stop, I must be growing crazy. Or, I feel dizzy, I'm going to faint. When anxiety causes your stomach to feel weird or your chest is tight, imagine telling yourself, I am medically safe. This is my body preparing for fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. And that's all. You might believe this for a second, but then your thoughts come back and you say, what if, what if? And you feel even more dizzy. That's okay. You just need to remind yourself again that you are medically safe. Over and over and over, each time, every time the feeling starts to come into your mind again, and slowly but surely, you will find yourself calming down. Practicing pulling your thoughts back from these catastrophic thoughts is part of what is called mindfulness. Mindfulness is learning to be in the present moment. Not being trapped in your thoughts and fears and feelings, and not attaching judgment to anything in your mind or your body. It means paying attention to what you see, feel, hear, and can touch in the here and now. And it's one of the most effective tools that you can use to calm yourself down. It's not easy. It definitely takes practice. Some days it'll feel impossible, while other days it'll come quite easily. After practicing mindfulness for some time, you'll be able to recognize when your automatic stress responses are starting to kick in. You'll learn what physical sensations are associated with those responses. So as soon as you start to feel that in your body, you can pull back You can detach from the thoughts and the flashbacks and the fears and the what ifs, and you can simply notice it without judgment. Instead of saying, "My chest hurts, I'm having a heart attack," you can say, "Wow, my chest hurts. I must be experiencing a threat. I must be feeling stressed." Then that's a fact. There's no judgment on it. There's no assumption or future fear of a heart attack attached to that. We're just being a passive observer, allowing the experience to come and go, because nothing is permanent. A lot of people think that mindfulness is about clearing your mind, and they say, "I've tried it, I can't do it, it doesn't work for me." Well, that's not what mindfulness is. You can't clear your mind. Mindfulness is about redirecting the focus of your mind and where you are attaching judgments. You choose to remove them and just allow things to exist as they are. It's about noticing and bringing yourself back over and over and over and over and over. When I used to feel a panic attack coming on, I used to get on the roller coaster ride. I used to have these thoughts like, "Oh my God, I'm gonna pass out again. I can't handle this. I gotta get out of here." That I'd fight with myself and say, "No, no, no, it's okay. You're fine. You can handle this. You can handle this. You can do it. It's okay. Calm down. Just calm down. Why can't you be normal? People are going to look at you. They're going to laugh at you. They're going to make fun of you. They're going to think you just want attention." And these thoughts would make me spiral deeper into the physical sensations, riding those ups and downs of the roller coaster. But now, with mindfulness, the first thing I do when I start to feel my body panic is I stop and I describe to myself where I feel it in my body. I say, "Oh wow, my chest is tight. My hands are numb. I'm feeling dizzy. I'm feeling like I might throw up. I feel like I have a cement block in my stomach." I'd name it. I'd give it a color. I'd give it a shape. And by describing it without these judgments or fears, I've gotten off the ride. And now I'm watching the roller coaster and allowing it to exist and come to an end. And when I tell myself things like, "Oh wow, I'm feeling dizzy. I'm feeling like I might throw up," I can then decide to sit down, to lay down, to do what my body needs me to do in order to get through to the other end, to the next moment of calm. Another thing we can do to help ourselves calm down and relax is called progressive muscle relaxation. It's meant to reduce anxiety and was first developed in the 1930s by an American physician named Edmund Jacobson. It's a technique that involves alternating tension in your muscle with different parts of your body. So how do you practice it? Well, you find a quiet place, either sitting up or laying down. You close your eyes and rest yourself comfortably. Take a deep breath in and out 3 times. Then you start with any muscle that you feel the most tense. I usually start with my shoulders. I raise them up to my ears and I hold them there as tight as I can for 15 seconds. And then I slowly release the tension and exhale a long, deep breath through my mouth. Then I move on to my hands. I make fists as tight as I can, and I hold that tension for 15 more seconds. And then I slowly release the grip and exhale another long, deep breath through my mouth. You can do this as many times as you want throughout different muscle groups in your body. If you'd like to learn more about this, I definitely recommend going on YouTube or finding a relaxation app, because they can show you and walk you through a progressive muscle relaxation routine and technique. And it's really important to practice your relaxation technique, this progressive muscle relaxation, your deep breathing, to practice these in times when you're feeling calm. You have to do that first. And once you become familiar with how to follow through on these behaviors, you can then start to use them when you're feeling stressed. I've noticed that I use muscle relaxation even when I'm in public. Sometimes people can't tell, and I'm sitting there tensing my back and taking a deep breath or clenching my feet in my shoes, and even just a little bit of awareness that I'm stressed and my effort to calm myself down really goes a long way. Another thing we can do when we have this mindful awareness is practice something called radical acceptance. It's when we acknowledge that there's stress happening and we choose to radically accept it. Something may be out of our control and there's nothing we can do about it but tolerate it. Maybe it's an uncomfortable situation at work or some bad news that you just got. The first thing I do to practice radical acceptance is called willing hands. It's a small little trick that you might think sounds silly, but I've found it to be profoundly effective. Basically, what you do when you're stressed out or upset is you open up both of your palms, put them by your side or on your lap. And by opening up your palms to the universe, you are choosing to accept the situation and tolerate it. It sends a little message to your body to relax. So say you're really upset and you're starting to cry or yell and you notice that your hands are clasped tightly, you can choose to unfold your fingers and face your palms up. Another trick to practicing radical acceptance is called half smiling. It's a very subtle Mona Lisa curl of the outer corner of your lips. It's not that noticeable, so it's a great thing to do in public. And when you notice yourself starting to spiral, feel stressed out, you slightly grin, just a little bit. And this is a way to trigger a physiological response to your body that says you're okay, that you're okay. And willing hands and half smiling go really well hand in hand. Try it out. This is something that I learned in dialectic behavioral therapy. Another really great thing to practice is yoga. Yoga is intended to unite the mind and your body and your breath, and it helps bring awareness to the present moment through your body and through your breathing. And if you practice this when you're calm, you notice that it carries over into other parts of your life, and you can find yourself more rooted in the present moment. It's about overcoming the fluctuations of our mind and maintaining a centered balance within our bodies. Another really important technique to practice is exercise. I know, if you're like me and have been depressed or had intense anxiety, being told to go out and exercise is like a slap in the face. It's like, dude, I can't even get out of bed or eat. What makes you think I can get to the gym? Well, hear me out. This is a high priority for managing stress. And these fight, flight, freeze, fawn responses are actually meant to be followed by a burst of activity. It's a way our body can calm down the nervous system by releasing excess stress hormones. And also, exercise increases our endorphins, which is the feel-good hormone. So exercise is really the quickest thing you can do to manage a stress response. You don't need to learn a new technique. You can do anything that keeps your heart rate up for at least 5 minutes. Longer exercise obviously increases these benefits for your health and long-term being, but if you can just get 5 minute bursts, that can be surprisingly helpful. So having these things in our lives to manage stress and make ourselves feel more calm, such as exercise, yoga, mindfulness, and progressive muscle relaxation, can really create a foundation that can help us stand up stronger to these automatic stress responses and help us navigate and make a more reasonable choice and even feel more comfortable because we're now able to create a sense of calm within our body. So that's a look at how our minds and bodies respond during trauma, how those responses can have long-term effects, and a few of the techniques that we can do to lessen our reactions and stress responses. On our next episode, I'm going to look at emotional, mental, and behavioral effects that occur after trauma. What does it do moving forward once the traumatic event has ended? I want to take a minute to thank the producer of our new theme song, Bay Window, a singer, songwriter, and producer from the San Francisco Bay Area. If you or someone you know is suffering and is in crisis, I recommend that you reach out to counselors at suicidepreventionlifeline.org/chat. There you can chat online with someone right away. Or you can call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. If you don't feel like talking on the phone, you can also text the crisis line by sending the word CONNECT in all caps to 741741. You're not alone. Thank you for listening and keep thriving.